chapter of the book of Isaiah is probably most remembered and recognized for the first verse or two, and then the last verse or two. And as we open up our Bibles to that place this evening and study, I think you'll recognize, if not the first verse, then surely the last verse in the chapter. Comfort, oh comfort my people, says your God. That's verse 1. This chapter appears to have been written, at least to me, just before the captivity of Judah in Babylon. Isaiah had spent most of his career arguing and teaching and preaching and trying to persuade God's people to turn away from their idolatry and to allow God to restore them to faithfulness. There are some things in this chapter that seem to be very positive, and those things would appear to me to have been addressed to the faithful remnant that surely was among the nation of Judah. And yet the bulk of what God says in this chapter is directed toward their forgetfulness and the fact that they have apparently turned away from God and have no intention of coming back to it. We want to turn our attention to the last verse of this chapter, which I suppose is perhaps more well known or remembered than many of the other verses in all of the Bible, where Isaiah says, "But they who wait for the Lord shall renew their strength. They shall mount up with wings like eagles. They shall run and not be weary. They shall walk and not faint." You know, it appears at verse 27, for example, when Isaiah says, "Why do you say, O Jacob, and speak, O Israel, my way is hidden from the Lord, and my right is disregarded by my God?" That seems to indicate that there were some among the people that Isaiah was talking to who didn't think that God either was keeping up with what was happening to them, or that God was aware of how they had been living. Either way, in either case, the answer is given to them in verse 28. "Have you not known? Have you not heard? The Lord is the everlasting God, the creator of the ends of the earth. He does not grow weary. His understanding is unsearchable." In other words, you need to get this idea out of your head that God isn't aware of everything that's going on. It is almost as though Isaiah is saying, "I've been trying to tell you all along there is no future in turning against God. If you're going to refuse to serve God, if you're going to insist on following after idols, there is nothing but bad in store for you." But in this chapter, and particularly in that last verse, Isaiah reminds them that God is not only very aware of everything that's going on, but God is also a source of strength. He is a source of strength when all other sources have been exhausted. When there is no physical reason for a person to be strong, God can give him strength. "Those who wait for the Lord shall renew their strength." When we contemplate this passage, I want to recall what we talked about this morning, how that Job's mindset was that he would wait through the appointed days of his life. Waiting on God is a theme that is echoed throughout the pages of the Old Testament especially, and perhaps we find it nowhere as much as we find it in the book of Psalms. Waiting for Jehovah. Most of us don't wait well. We want what we want when we want it, and usually we want it right now. And if we have to wait for anything, that really causes problems with us. Fast food, instant coffee, drive-through banking. In fact, there are very few things you can't do at a drive-through window now, thanks to the last few years in teaching us how to be more mobile. I get so tired of eating lunch in my pickup truck every day. It's ridiculous that we've turned ourselves into a society of people who operate based on drive-through windows. We've streamlined it, whatever it is. You know, sometimes it's hard to keep our relationship with God from being that way as well. Because living in a culture, as a part of a society that is very demanding, is very impatient, it's sometimes tempting to want God to hurry up. Maybe even being a little bit like the folks of Judah in thinking that God isn't paying attention. And yet over and over, God assures us that He is paying attention. We have His full attention. This matter of waiting on God is something that I believe we need to study more about. There is great spiritual benefit in waiting on God and the exercise of patience. I believe it was in the Old Testament commentary that was written by Brother E.M. Zur that I read that this word, as I said this morning, is actually more than just patiently passing time while someone or something doesn't come or doesn't perform or doesn't answer as quick as we want them to. That's what waiting means. It's a platform for being impatient, waiting. We've got waiting rooms. We've got waiting lines. We've got everything tailored to waiting, and we don't like any of it. And yet God's Word tells us over and over and over that we will benefit greatly from waiting on the Lord. So what does it mean? What does the Word really mean? I shared some of this with you this morning. The word translated wait means to rely on God and to do His bidding. And by implication, it points to the matter of patience, hope, staying, tarrying, trusting. In fact, the New International Version translates this particular passage as those who hope in God. Those who hope in God are those who wait on God. Wait for the Lord. Someone has said that faith is how we access God's grace. Love is how we live in God's grace. And hope is what helps us to stay steadfast in the trials of faith. Hope in God. The bottom line here is that those who trust in the Lord, those who hope in God and live with the assurance that He is the everlasting God, creator of the ends of the earth, those folks are promised a strength that far surpasses the normal physical strength of the human body. Obviously, we're talking about a spiritual strength. And this spiritual strength is to be highly desired. Let's break that strength down and take a look at some of the different ways that God renews our strength. The strength of waiting. First of all, I would suggest to you that this involves inward strength. Who doesn't need more inward strength? I believe it is this strength that Paul addresses when he writes to the Christians in Corinth in 2 Corinthians chapter 4. In verse 1, and then right at the end of the chapter, verse 16, he makes the same statement two times. We do not lose heart. In the first verse and near the end of the chapter. And in the middle, verses 8 through 10, he says, we are afflicted in every way but not crushed. We're perplexed but not driven to despair. Persecuted but not forsaken. Struck down but not destroyed. Always carrying in the body the death of Jesus, so that the life of Jesus may be manifested in our bodies. This inward strength was what Israel needed in order to keep going, even though they were the creators of the mess that they were living in. You might say they were living under the "you made your bed" principle. You familiar with that principle? You know how someone will say, well, he made his bed. He's got to sleep in it. God doesn't withhold his inner strength from us just because we created the mess that we're in. God is offering his inner strength to Judah in Isaiah chapter 40, knowing that they were the ones who got themselves in the mess that they are in. But yet God says, if you will wait on me, if you will hope in me, I will strengthen you. I think we've got a lot in common with those folks, because at least speaking from a personal standpoint, a lot of the messes I find myself in are my own creation. God offers to strengthen us and to help us even when we have made the mess ourselves. In contrast to Job that we studied this morning, Job had not created the mess that he was in. Job, it appears from all appearances, the way we look and reason through things, Job was an innocent victim of some of the games that Satan likes to play. We don't have to be like Job in order to know that there is spiritual strength available to us. Not only is this an inward strength, this could also be described as an upward strength. God said, they shall mount up with wings like eagles. You know, life is full of ups and downs. But God strengthens us if we're willing to rely on him and to do his bidding. But I'm afraid too many of us are a little bit like Lucy in the old Peanuts comic strip. She was complaining to Charlie Brown one day about her quote-unquote lousy life. And he was trying to cheer her up. Nothing really was doing any good that he said. And so he said to her, just remember, life has its mountains and its valleys, its ups and downs. And to this, Lucy said, well, all I want is the ups. That's kind of the way we are sometimes. We don't want anything to do with the downs. We want the ups and only the ups. But the problem is you can't have just the ups. That would be nice, except think about how underdeveloped we would be if all we had were the mountaintops. Like the bird that never got out of the nest, never experiencing difficulty, therefore never developing the resiliency that it takes to survive. Always having everything provided makes us very weak. While God promises to take care of His people, nowhere does He ever say you won't ever have to lift a finger. One way that God blesses us and makes us stronger is by allowing us to struggle. In fact, the psalmist said in Psalm 119, verse 71, "It is good for me to have been afflicted so that I might learn your decrees." I think most of us could say we know for sure by nothing more than the powers of observation that those who have never had hardship never seem to learn how to deal with the realities of life. Number three, there is the outward strength. He says, "They shall run and not get weary." You know, as we get older, we don't hold up as well as we used to. Yeah, you may not have noticed that yet. I'm just telling you. You're going to wake up one day and you're going to realize, ooh, something has changed here. I remember realizing a few years back, you know, that I couldn't run nearly as fast nor as long as I used to. That wasn't nearly as traumatic as it was recently when I discovered that it's pretty much a given that I can't run anymore at all. I don't know how big something would have to be that would get after me before I could really run. These old legs and especially the knees just seem to be about worn out. As we get older, we don't last as long as it seems like we want to. There comes a time in life when you have to stop doing certain things. Otherwise, those younger guys will hurt you. I believe one of the ways that we're supposed to compensate for that fact is that as we get older, we better be getting wiser. We better be getting smarter if we're going to survive. One of the ways that God definitely blesses us as a result of our service to Him is a level of increasing spiritual strength, an outward strength that helps us to bear up and to keep going. This, as the name implies, is a strength that may be more visible to those around us. Therefore, we are naturally in a better position of influencing and leading those around us who are younger. This outward strength of those who shall run and not be weary will help to keep us going. Galatians 6 verse 9 says, "And let us not grow weary of doing good, for in due season we'll reap if we do not give up." One of the things that we should never get old enough to do as a Christian, did I lose you in that? One of the things that we should never get old enough to do as a Christian is sit back and watch others work. We should never reach a point where we think we should be able to do that. Because in spiritual work, there's some for everybody. No matter who we are, no matter how young or how old, God will bless us with the spiritual strength we need as long as we continue to use it. It's when we stop using it that it begins to fade. Number four, onward strength. They shall walk and not faint. In other words, God will give us strength for the long haul. He won't leave us just because our physical body is no longer able to keep the pace that it once did. I need to tell you that I got the majority of this material, the outline for it, from the late Brother Mickey Bell. He preached for the Jersey Village Church of Christ in Houston, Texas. You may remember his name. For a couple of years, Mickey was on our prayer list. He was married to one of Paul Kidwell's sisters. He fought a tremendous battle with cancer in his vital organs that he just simply was unable to win. But he kept going for a lot longer than anybody thought that he ever would. Even when he was taking very strong treatments, he only missed preaching and teaching his classes a handful of times. And I often said, "Brother, I don't know what keeps you going. But I do know." Here's how he put it in a sermon outline that he sent to me as he neared the end of his life. He said, and I quote, "Sometimes life gets so difficult that we just don't think we're going to make it. We may be to the point where we say, 'Lord, I'm not soaring like an eagle. I'm not running like a foot soldier. I'm not even walking. Lord, just give me the strength not to faint.' And somehow you keep going." And then he said, "You ever wonder why? It's because Isaiah 40, verse 31, is a promise." End of quote. That's true. It's not just good advice. It's not just a catchy verse that will make a good plaque to put on the magnetic thing on the front of your refrigerator. It's an absolute promise. "But they who wait for the Lord shall renew their strength. They shall mount up with wings like eagles. They shall run and not be weary. They shall walk and not faint." Again, this is the spiritual strength that God promises us, that will carry us through the times when our physical strength has all been used up. This was the strength that kept Job going. This was the strength, I believe, that kept Brother Mickey Bell going. This is the strength that will keep us going if we will wait on the Lord. If you've never obeyed the gospel, we hope you do that tonight. If you have become a Christian, but have become unfaithful in your service to God, we hope that you'll come back and be restored. If you need to do that, We invite you to respond now as we stand together and sing.